Welcome to Leadership Works with Chris and Karen Conley. We are so excited to be with you. Let me welcome our guest for today. This is Josh Ross. Josh, thank you for coming in studio with us today.
It's an honor to be here. I love the show, so it's great to be a part.
Well, we appreciate it. Josh is a great friend of mine, and over the last 18 months, 24 months, we've had the opportunity to kind of collaborate a little bit and talk about books. And Josh was telling me about this amazing book that he's written, and the name of the book is Reentry: How Pain, Roots, and Rhythm Guide Us from Darkness to Light. And I just love the title, the whole concept, but what I really love is just how this came into being and the whole genesis behind it. So give us a little bit of the backstory to the book.
Chris, thanks for your friendship. Great bouncing ideas off of each other, and look forward to doing a lot more of that in the future.
Absolutely.
This is a crazy idea, man. Okay, so it was one of those days, and I'm sure you've had these days, where you're writing a sermon, an idea comes to you, you start Googling. So I was writing a sermon on, this was back in 2013, on Jesus being the light of the world. It just kind of triggered in my head. I was like, I've heard of places before above the Arctic Circle that they may go a lengthy season every winter without seeing the sun. I had heard before in conversations that there can be a peak season for depression, maybe suicide attempts. So I just started doing some research. I came across some articles in the American Journal of Psychiatry. The New York Times did some research on this. There is a peak season for suicide attempts and depression in some of these places. So I started reading more and discovered that a lot of these towns above the Arctic Circle, so you're talking about Alaska, Canada, Russia, maybe a few other places, they go almost 65 days every winter without seeing the sun. Blows my mind right there, because right here in Memphis, if we go 8 days in the winter in February where it's cloudy, people are coming to me. It's like saying, man, I'm in a funk, you know, help me, pray for me.
And I can tell you, Karen knows nothing about that, because when we were picking the destination for our honeymoon, she said, you've got to go as far south as possible, because the last thing I like is being cold. So you're going to have to educate us on these things.
Okay,
that are...
So yeah, that's my wife too, Casey. She cannot stand the cold. So here's what blew me away. The peak season for depression and suicide attempts is not in the period of darkness. There was one phrase that captured my imagination and would not let me go, and it was in the American Journal of Psychiatry. The research they did is that the problem was with reentry into the light. The peak season's when the sun returns. Your mind may not be on the same pace as your body, or your body isn't on the same pace with your mind, and you're trying to adapt to the new conditions, or you're thinking the sun's going to come and bring immediate change, but it's still cold. The elements remain. So mine was going in so many different directions. So I called on my agent who lives in Nashville, a literary agent. Sometimes I feel like I need to take a shower when I say that, because I'm not big time, all right? But this guy's been a great friend in the other books I've written. And I shared this idea. I was like, dude, I'm going to write on light and darkness. And he said, if you want to write about it, you got to go. But I grew up in Texas, and I've lived in Memphis now for 9 years. So I've always lived in the South. I had never experienced weather below 0 degrees, but he talked me into it. Shot an email to a few friends, because it was going to be an expensive project, taking a videographer, video equipment, flying up to Barrow, Alaska, which is the northernmost point. It's the tip-top point in Alaska. It's a community of 5,000-6,000 people. I stood at the point where the United States of America cannot go any further north than the point where I stood. And I spent 11 days with this community. Now, let me make this abundantly clear that the people of Barrow are not depressed people who are about to kill themselves, all right? But I went up thinking, if these people know how to survive a lengthy season of darkness every winter, 65, 70 days, then maybe there are some principles that keep this community alive and thriving that can feed us and nurture us no matter where we live, individuals, for communities, for churches. So I went up there, I hung out with anybody who would hang out with me, principals, pastors, recovery groups, local libraries, anyone who would hang out with me. I just wanted to hear their stories. Counselors at the local high schools, teachers, and came away with some principles that keeps that community thriving that then developed into a sermon series and a book.
All right, Josh, as two fellow people in the ministry, you have just taken sermon prep to a whole new level. Okay? The videographer and trips to Alaska for research. I don't think we mentioned at the front of broadcast that you are the lead pastor at Sycamore View Church of Christ. This topic of reentry, from what I've read, and obviously you know every word of this book, really applies to anyone in their journey, but whether they're a believer or not. Help us to see some of your top takeaways as a person of faith. And this whole, obviously, light and darkness is a huge theme in the Bible. What were some of the things in Alaska that gave you a visual of truth that you had never seen before?
Yeah, so the three main themes of the book: the theme of reentry, theme of roots, having healthy roots, having established roots, and a theme of rhythm. So I was meeting with one of the therapists at the local high school, who he does a lot of work and has done a lot of work, not just in Barrow, but in a lot of the smaller villages around Alaska. And I was sharing with him why I was there, and he told me, he said, well, that kind of makes sense what you're sharing, because whenever the sun returns in late January, he said, I feel a sense of depression coming in, he said, to his life. And he said, the reason is that you expect when the sun comes back that it will bring immediate change. Man, we preach in front of people all the time that we're like, man, if people are thinking, if I can just get to the light, then all the other things will go away. And he says, but what happens is the sun returns, but the elements actually remain or get worse, meaning it may get colder. The ice doesn't melt. The snow doesn't go away. So what do you do in life? And I think this preaches to anyone. What do you do in life when you make a commitment to change, or there's transformation or a conversion, or I'm going to go in a new direction, but relationships remain? The elements are there. 2/3 of the people at 201 Poplar right now are here in Memphis, the famous jail. This is at least their sixth time to be in there. So why would people get released from bondage to make decisions to go right back in? And then I think I preach in front of people every week who do the same thing.
And I think this is a frequent mistake that we make. You see this all the time when people grant forgiveness to someone or are on the receiving end of forgiveness, that we think forgiveness will just heal everything immediately. Forgiveness is something that can be given immediately, but the healing process takes time.
Oh, absolutely.
As we look at different things in our life, that there's always that turning point, the defining moment, the catalyst to change. But what we've got to see is when we actually are changing, there's a process that you can't have the final product without the process.
Yeah.
Elaborate a little bit on what you saw, because that's a fascinating idea that when the sun came back out, they were expecting the change immediately, but there needed to be this reentry process.
Yeah. The people who I think are the healthiest in Barrow, and this could probably be true in Memphis too, they are the people who have the most established roots and people who have a healthy rhythm, meaning in the wintertime, it's too cold to be outside. I was there in January, so I was there the last week of the period of darkness. Any building you went in, there was on the wall would be a graph with the wind chill and how many minutes you had to have where your skin was exposed before frostbite set in. You can't really be outside. There's not much of a community hub in Barrow, but the people who have the healthiest rhythm in life to keep them active, who did the best making it through the wintertime and re-entering into the sun. Having established roots was important. So for me, even how I teach or preach or when I talk about this subject is, what are the concrete beliefs and convictions in your life that you know without a shadow of a doubt, whatever storm comes in your life or may come, these are the things that keep you grounded and rooted. Now, 20 years ago for me, when I was about to go to college, that list was like 30. It's gotten smaller since I get older, but as it gets smaller, those few convictions become even stronger. These are what I stand on. So having established roots, what am I rooted in? What keeps my family rooted, my marriage rooted? And what are the rhythms that keep me connected to God, to family, to ministry, compassion?
You know, Josh, when I hear you talk about these people go through a 2-month period where there's darkness, and all of us go through seasons of life where there's darkness in our life, there's struggles in our life,
absolutely,
there's storms in our life, and none of us are problem-free. We live a world full of problems. It's impossible for us to be problem-free. So draw some of the parallels that exist between, okay, what you saw in their darkness that is part of their everyday life, it's a part of their culture because of where they live. But now also you see these principles of roots, like when someone goes through the loss of a loved one, when someone goes through a crisis or adversity or tragedy or divorce or something of that nature, or struggles with their kids, and it throws them into oftentimes months of darkness or even years of darkness.
Right.
What are some of those principles that you have learned both on a personal level from your own experience, but also from the research you've done, the writing you've done, and obviously the biblical truths that we know that help people come out of that darkness?
Yeah, so glad you went there, because when I first started writing the book, I viewed all darkness as bad. So this forced me to go back to Scripture, especially the life and teachings of Jesus, but all of Scripture. How does light and darkness play out throughout Scripture? Most of the time when darkness shows up, it is in the context of it's sin-induced, it's the powers of darkness, it's evil, but it's not always that way. There are times where God sends some form of cloud or darkness to slow us down, to convict us of something. Some of the best psalms were written in darkness. Jesus came out of a grave that was dark. So darkness isn't always bad. In fact, Barbara Brown Taylor, great theologian, writer, author, she wrote a book right when I started this project about the beauty of darkness, like why we need some darkness. So I had to write a chapter early on in the book just because of Barbara Brown Taylor. If I ever see her, I may kick her in the shin. She like totally like messed up everything I was trying to do. The idea of darkness is so broad. We go through dark seasons because of grief, bankruptcy, depression, parents who send their kids off to school. Mm-hmm. I mean, the list just goes on and on of these dark seasons or transitions that we go in. One line I've come back to over and over again is that for all of us, whether as individuals, as a family, as churches, even as a community, what do you do when you have gone through a circumstance, a tragedy, and how you walk into the future with God is not how you've walked in the past with God, not necessarily because God has changed, but circumstances and relationships have.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have lost someone, you're trying to navigate what this road is like going into the future, the person's not there anymore.
Right.
Or when divorce hits, like reconciliation, does it mean that that couple may get back together? It's not going to mean they get back together. So how do you navigate these seasons of darkness? Now, this also forced me to kind of start thinking about the history of Memphis. Like, what does this mean? Not just for an individual, but cities go through seasons of darkness. So as a community, how does an entire community help navigate some of these seasons together so we can lead a city to a healthier place?
Josh, my mind is going so many different directions. We sometimes act like you're supposed to get over your junk in a week. You might be lingering and it might be a long journey, but you're supposed to pretend like it's not.
Yes.
I love the fact you are addressing the reality is it's not always quick. I'm wondering if maybe you can make something really tangible. When you talk about the roots, what are some examples of the roots that you would say? I know you talked about some convictions. Are all roots a biblical truth that you hold on to? Is it all your belief in God? That person that's listening right now, like if they're in that darkness and they're listening and they think, you know, I'm going to go pick up your book, what would be an example of a root that they could hold on to right now?
Yeah, thanks for asking that question. My sister tragically passed away in 2010. So for me, these are rooted in faith. God is the one who created in the beginning, and he can still create out of nothingness now. God is the God of steadfast love and covenant, and he still is. God is the one who delivered in the Exodus story. He's the God who still delivers. Jesus, the resurrection is true, and this is the one I bank my life on, the way I want to raise my children, the way I want to preach, the way I want to engage my neighborhood in Binghamton, the way I want to live in Memphis, is that if the resurrection of Jesus is true, how does it change how I live in my context in my city? Because what God did for Jesus is what God wants to do for everyone. So those would be the four main roots I want to bank my life on, my decisions, my convictions I want to live from. So when I go through, there are storms in life or tragedies, things that come, I need to sit back and reflect back on these are what keeps me connected to God, to community, to people, to my wife, to life.
Mm-hmm.
I just came from a group of women and someone was talking about the word crisis and how much that word kind of scares them. But really, a crisis back in the Greek meaning of the word talks about a decision, and it's really a decision point.
Oh, wow, I love that.
And so even if someone listening right now is in that crisis of everything is going wrong, it is also a decision point to hold true to the roots that you have. And
yeah.
Talk about how important it is for those roots to be established before the darkness, and what do you do if they haven't been?
Yeah, because it takes a long time for roots to be established.
Yep.
I mean, you think I've had a few God encounters in my life, like I could put them on a wall, frame them. And one of them was, I was out in San Francisco visiting Muir Woods. It's the Redwood Forest. Some of the roots were coming out of the ground, but then you learn how the roots are pretty shallow. These massive trees, roots are shallow, and they intermingle, like they intertwine with each other, forming really strong roots, which makes for a really good sermon, right? That's how roots are established. So it takes time. And I think one of the longest journeys we have to walk is that journey from darkness to light, because this is not overnight. The rhythm I talk about in the book is the rhythm of solitude, community, and ministry and service. This is the rhythm that worked for Jesus in Luke 6. It's the rhythm that seems to work for his apostles and the church, connected to God in solitude, connected to community, friends, meaningful relationships,
mm-hmm.
and connected to justice, compassion, service, those forms of ministry. It's not that we need a third of our lives in all of those areas, but it is a rhythm that helps us establish these roots, because I get to teach some of this stuff with college students quite a bit, or when I travel some in the summertime to do church camps and youth events. Some of them, if you were to ask them, what are your roots? They don't really know what roots are. And I'm like, you need to be thinking through this now to develop what they are so that you're not waiting for the storm to come and then trying to think, what am I standing on? This is a way to be proactive in life. And it takes some time to sit back and really think about what those convictions are. But I need these so I can be proactive in life. And they are what we can fall back on
right.
in times of crisis, storms, transitions, shifts.
When I think about the word crisis and the question that you just asked, Josh, another way to look at crisis is for the believer that goes through this point of darkness, then they can rely upon the roots. But there's also these people who aren't believers who don't have the roots. But that's when most people find Christ in the crisis. He shows up to be the strongest and the brightest light in the midst of the darkest of dark.
Oh, wow.
You know, so you find Christ in the crisis. And the second thing that I saw, Josh, is that you also mentioned in roots, the relational component. Karen and I, just this past weekend, dropped our son off, our firstborn. We've got a daughter that's also a senior in high school, so we're going to do this double whammy of college and back-to-back years. As we were reflecting over the weekend, one of the things that Karen and I said is, how do you do this if you don't have a strong marriage? If you invest your entire life into your children and then you just send them away and you come home and you don't have a strong roots, mm-hmm. you don't have a strong marriage. So I think that relational thing, we know it intellectually, but we've got to go back to the essence of the heart that everything that we do root-wise really goes back to relationships.
Absolutely. When Casey and I were getting married, we did a lot of premarital. We were at a Christian college. It's like, sure. Where's premarital being offered anywhere? We're going to go because we want to be ready. But this was a question I remember us talking before we even got married, is we're entering into a marriage that we want to last forever. What's this marriage going to be built on? So together we were forming these roots that have still remained roots and rhythms in our marriage. We had our first child 5 years into marriage. Our oldest just turned 10. One of our commitments is we've got to get away every year without any kids so that we can reflect. You do that too?
Absolutely. Yes. We say that vacation is just Chris and Karen. Family adventure is the kids.
Yes. It is the greatest commitment we've made. We have some people come up to us even at church and they're like, how can you leave your kids for like a night? And we're like, it's kind of easy. Like,
yeah, that's right. Exactly.
We throw them at grandparents and they don't like love nurturing food. They don't like any of that. It hit me a few years ago. Why do I often treat my car better than I treat my own soul and my marriage?
Wow.
That if my car's in trouble, if my car is on the E, I don't even sit back and think about whether I'm filling up with gas or not. Yet sometimes we think, well, when the kids go to college, and then we'll, you know, try to reconnect. And we need stuff that keep us connected in marriage with our kids, commitments in our neighborhood, even what it means to be a good neighbor, to have some of these roots and rhythms that are keeping us connected to the mission God has placed us in for the sake of our own hearts and our future.
You know, Josh, as you've talked about rhythm.
Do you have any rhythm, by the way?
I can't dance at all. All right.
You've got size 14 feet and size 12 feet on this side of the table. So all we do is step on toes.
Yeah, we are not people of rhythm. I am tone deaf when it comes to music. I love all of it and love people who can dance, but I just watch.
How about you, Josh? You have rhythm?
I enjoy it.
Our son claims that he can dance. We've not seen it in person yet, but he claims that he's got the moves.
I'm raising two B-boys. Like kids who want to spin on their heads and all that kind of stuff. So it's really fun. But you were about to ask a more serious question.
Well, you know, as you think about these rhythms, we come out of the darkness, we establish a healthy rhythm. And if we're not careful, we kind of fall into this false thinking that, oh, we're never going to enter the darkness again.
Yeah.
But up in Alaska, it's predictable.
Yeah, right.
They know that they're going to enter the darkness again. Was there anything that you kind of learned about how they condition themselves, not only for coming out of the darkness, but for how to go into the darkness? Because if we're really honest with ourselves as Christ followers, in understanding that we live in a sinful world and we live among sinful people, and we are the sinful people too, there is also, unfortunately, a rhythm of us coming out of darkness, going into darkness, and then having good seasons, and kind of that whole rhythm of, you're either coming out of a crisis, or maybe you're in a season where you're not in crisis, or you're heading back into a crisis. What about that concept?
Man, that's so good. I don't think this would surprise you. The people who do the best in Barrow are people who've been there for a while. Mm. The natives, folks who have lived there over 10 years, the people who really struggle are the people who've only been there a few years, or the people who travel up there in the school year to make money, because there's great money in Barrow, and they come back to their homes in Tulsa, Seattle, Orlando, Virginia. I met people who live all over the lower 48. Those people struggle. Because for those who've lived there for a while, the wintertime isn't the only time of the year that's hard. The summertime is just as difficult because the sun doesn't set. It's 3 a.m. and it's broad daylight. So if you don't have rhythm to make you rest, so they have ways they can put foil on the windows to try to create darkness the best they can. If they don't have a rhythm to rest, it can mess them up. It can mess up work ethic. It can mess up the community. So the people who have been there for a while, it's part of their annual rhythm. They're ready for it. They know how to prepare for it. They know what they need to help them, to sustain them through whatever season of the year it is.
I think that's important for all of us as we look at our own walk with God, to not set the expectations so high on this side of heaven that we're not ever going to re-enter darkness. But we learn a rhythm that, you know what, adversity, that's kind of a part of life. Crisis at times, it's a part of life. Good circumstances, bad circumstances, it's a part of life. So how do I establish a rhythm that allows me to live through the good, the bad, and the ugly?
Yeah, so with rhythm, this is a conversation I lead our staff through every year, once a year, about rhythm, especially Luke 6. We go back solitude, community, and ministry. And the question I ask every time, I'm launching a podcast based on the book. I'm trying to ask every single guest this question. Of those three, right now in your life in 2017, which is the easiest, which is the most difficult? Because the answer changes.
Josh, obviously every leader has the human side, the relational side that we've already talked about. But how do you see the truths of reentry applying in a leadership context?
I think it's vital. The whole idea, especially of roots and rhythm, because for a leader, for you to be proactive and to live from a healthy place, which your team feeds off of, what is it that's keeping you rooted so that you're living? People can tell when you're living and leading from a healthy place, because a healthy place is a joyful place. And people want to follow joyful leaders. I think one of the things of the enemy, if he can rob us of joy, he robs us of witness. Because who wants to follow a person who doesn't have that? So roots and rhythm keep us connected to the joy and the hopes that we live and lead from those places. Any organization you're a part of, there are going to be times of storms, and not just storms. There are going to be a lot of transitions and shifts, people coming in and out, all different kind of transitions and shifts that go on. So what are the constants? What are those things that sustain you through whatever may be there?
One of the things I've learned in the last 15 years of leading High Point Church, my rhythm either positively or negatively affects the organization.
Yes.
I set the tone. Others, you know, are always kind of monitoring whether or not I'm living in a healthy rhythm or whether or not I'm living at a pace that's kind of chaotic and ultimately in the RPM zone that's running the engine too hot. So I think it's important for all of us as leaders to know that if we want our followers to have a good rhythm, they're following our lead.
Yeah, and it's also vital for leaders to not be afraid to be vulnerable about some of the darkness you experience. Because if you only stand up and make it look like you're thriving and living from the light your entire life, you're not authentic. So when and how to be vulnerable about, I'm going through a dark season, and here's some of the things that I'm practicing in my life to keep me rooted and grounded.
Josh, I can only imagine how many people listening to this want to go and learn more, because you're hitting something that's going to affect every human being. And so your book is coming out September 12th. Tell us if they want to buy a copy, they want to follow you on social media, what's the best way to do that?
September 12th is my birthday too, so buy one. You can jump on and buy one just for me to celebrate my
birthday
if you want to. Now, you jump on Amazon, the best place to go and get it, but it should also be available at bookstores near you. If you want to, for your organization, your team, or for your family, if you want to purchase 10 or more, contact Leafwood Publishing, and there is a significant discount for those who want to purchase 10 or more. You can follow me on Twitter at Joshua Lewis, L-O-U-I-S, Joshua Lewis Ross. Check me out on Facebook. I'm launching a podcast on August 25th. It's called The Reentry Podcast with Josh Ross. Jump on, subscribe, and I'm bringing on guests. I'll have a local guest every Tuesday, a Memphis guest, and I'll also have a non-Memphis person on Friday as we just tell stories and hear stories of how people have navigated forms of darkness, transitions, and shifts and confusion in their own life.
So I'm
going
to be on that podcast soon. So if
yeah, man,
y'all
want
to know about Chris Connolly's darkness, you can go listen.
I get plenty of it. No, I'm just kidding. Well, thank you so much, Josh, for being our guest. Good luck and congratulations with the book. I can't wait to see how the Lord is going to use it. If you want more information, please go to Amazon. Get Reentry, How Pain, Roots, and Rhythm Guide Us from Darkness to Light, available September 12th. Also, if you would like more information on Leadership Works, our annual conference is coming up November 3rd. We have a fantastic lineup of speakers, Dr. Tim Irwin, Shannon Brown, Dr. Bernice King, and John O'Leary will round out our event. Check out leadershipworksconference.org.
Go register now, right now. I promise you, this is a no-regret decision. You do not want to miss this. It is a life-changing event. Dr. Bernice A. King, it is a privilege to have her coming leading up to the 50th anniversary of Dr. King's assassination. This is an important moment in our history. Be there. Check it out. I promise you, you will benefit.